I'm Jovan Buha. He's Jason Timpf. No Trevor Lane today. We're running a two-man show, but we are the Lakers Collective, presented by Prize Picks, our new presenting sponsor. Jason, we talked about it a couple days ago, that what we wanted to see from the Lakers against the Thunder, what would constitute a success outside of course, a victory. And let's just say we did not see anything we had wanted to see from a couple of days ago. Lakers lose by 43 points in a game that I think was not even that close. I think it was closer to a 50-point loss than a 43-point loss. They get curb stomped by the Oklahoma City Thunder, down 18-4 in less than 5 minutes. Just a disaster performance by the Lakers. And then to top it all off, Luka Doncic exits early in the third quarter with this left hamstring injury that he's been dealing with on and off for a couple of months. So not only do the Lakers have the deflating loss, they potentially now have a longer term issue here with Luka and the status of his hamstring. But first and foremost, how are you doing today? And what did you think of last night?
It's good to see you, man. I'm doing good. It's weird. I have this like weird feeling where the hopefulness surrounding the Lakers has been kind of chopped off at the knees. But then I'm a big Arizona Wildcats fan. I grew up in Tucson, so I'm very excited for the game on Saturday. Obviously, Trevor is ducking the fade today. But if he had to miss a show, this was probably the one to miss. So let's all wish Trevor some safe travels, and we will see him. I think we're doing like a Wednesday, Friday next week, so we'll see him most likely on Wednesday. We have a couple of fun ones, the OKC rematch as well as a Golden State matchup where I think Steph will probably be playing. So that should be a fun one for us to hit next week. So Trevor will have plenty of opportunity for him to get his opinions out there. But yeah, like, I mean, we talked about it on Wednesday last week. Like, we talked about how the phrase I used on this show was, I just wanted to see them not get knocked off their foundation. Meaning like, you know, if they played Laker basketball and got more or less the same types of shots that they normally get, and maybe they don't shoot super well, but they shoot well enough to kind of keep things competitive. And on the other end of the floor, they kind of execute their defensive game plan and relatively contain Shea, but he makes a bunch of great passes and guys hit some shots and they rebound well enough and to avoid turning the basketball over enough to where they lose like 112 to 104. And it's like kind of in reach the whole time. You leave that game going, okay, let's win in LA next week on Tuesday. And then we'll kind of consider this a nice little step forward. But instead it was the opposite, that knocking off the foundation that I had talked about. Like when you see a team start to decompose into essentially what was the older, worse version of themselves, it was like a flashback to December in so many different ways, with the way that the team looked on both ends of the floor, completely overmatched athletically, which is like kind of ridiculous considering we've played some really athletic teams over the course of the last month and actually held up athletically to a greater extent, to the complete soiling of themselves at the point of attack offensively, losing control of the basketball. And like, yes, it was Austin early, but Luka wasn't good handling the basketball either. LeBron had a sloppy turnover out by the right wing. DeAndre Ayton looked completely out of his depth in this game early on. I think, honestly, the two most concerning things to me were, you know, Luka's game is naturally has variance. He's going to have games where he misses a lot of threes and has turnovers. It's kind of the differentiator between him and that like actual best player in the world title. That's always been true with him. He could very well, if he stayed healthy, have had a great game on Tuesday, right? Even against such a great defense. But I was really concerned about whether or not Austin would be able to handle the pressure, handle the speed, handle the smaller, tighter windows that you have to play against Oklahoma City. And I was worried about whether or not DeAndre Ayton would be able to play in a game this intense with these types of stakes. And they both didn't just fail, but they failed spectacularly. Austin right away just immediately decomposed against the defensive pressure from Oklahoma City. DeAndre Ayton drops two easy dunks underneath the basket, one from Luka, one from LeBron. I thought he was getting out-hustled by Isaiah Hartenstein. That put them up against the eight ball right away. And then the most discouraging part is Oklahoma City shoots really well And instead of weathering the storm and sticking with their execution, I thought the Lakers just completely lost confidence and stopped executing just because Oklahoma City shot well. And it's one of those things where if you just stick with your game plan, maybe they're up 12-13 because they went 7-for-9 from three, but maybe the shooting stabilizes. Maybe Luka hits a couple step back threes. Austin gets something going, and all of a sudden you got yourself a 7-point game and you have a chance to compete. But instead the opposite happened. They got super hot from three and the Lakers started hanging their heads. There were like several sequences where long rebounds came to like the foul line area and multiple Lakers were just standing around the perimeter, not trying to chase the long rebounds. The shot selection suffered. I thought Luka took some really bad threes as things were decomposing where he wasn't even really getting separation. Then the turnovers started to pile up and they just completely decomposed. And so it was the double whammy of the worst possible outcome, Jovan. They completely got knocked off their foundation and you get an injury to Luka that will almost certainly keep him out for several games, if not for much longer than that. It's a really, really dark day for Laker fans.
I mean, last night it didn't look like they had a foundation. I was a little confused on both sides of the ball what they were trying to accomplish. Like we had seen in that second matchup against OKC back in February that they had found some success attacking with LeBron in the post and trying to either beat their bigs off the dribble or attack their smaller guards in the post. And I thought they went to that a little bit too late. Like they went to that later in the first quarter and then into the second quarter. And at that point, the game was already out of hand. But to your point, I was really disappointed with the resilience from the group because that had been something that had dramatically shifted over the past couple of months, especially in March, where I think about the Cleveland game, even just a couple games ago, like did not have the best first quarter, had a good offensive first quarter, but I mean, Jared Allen was giving them work inside and like that could have gone off the rails, but they have had this element of just keeping their composure. And even if they have like a wobbly first quarter, they find a way to gather themselves in the second quarter. And then as we saw early second quarter, they turned that game into a blowout. So that element to me just dissipating so quickly was what was most disappointing. And I think we've now seen this from the Lakers. And I think it is matchup specific against the Thunder, the Spurs, and to a lesser degree, the Suns, where when they face this type of defense and when they face a team with a certain amount of speed and ball pressure and aggression defensively, they just start to your point, like decompose and crash out. And it just becomes all of a sudden, like after, because I think what happened after the first few minutes of Austin has four turnovers in 3 minutes, he just completely loses control of the game. From that point on, the Lakers are playing on their heels and it starts to become, well, if we have a shot, we have to take it. Or like, you know, just not turning the ball over on a possession becomes a win for them. And they start to speed through their actions. And then you see, I thought there was a trickle down effect where now DA is kind of frantic trying to catch the ball or trying to make a move or something. Rui and Luke, I thought, were rushing their shots and their shooting form did not look. And so you saw like in the pressure cooker of a playoff like environment, like that had a game one type feel. And the Lakers just got ran off the court. So like that's my thing with them of as we maybe transition into like the reality check for them as to their title chances. I already didn't think they could beat OKC, but I walked away from last night thinking like, I think that series would be closer to a sweep than a 6-game series. I think my official pick would be OKC in 5, but I think that was LA playing closest to their floor and OKC playing pretty close to their ceiling. I still think though, even if those two teams stabilize, like it's not really close. And I think OKC wins in 5. And I think 3 of those wins are probably like 15 plus blowouts. Like I just don't think right now it's close between these two teams.
Yeah, I agree. I think like we had talked about, I don't think anybody had delusions of grandeur as to whether or not we were on Oklahoma City's level even before this game. To your point, like
I've seen a little bit of that
a little like, but the three of us that when we were talking on Wednesday were like, we just want to see him compete. Like just go in there and don't embarrass yourself, please, for the love of God. Right. Like, and so I think where I draw it more, because to your point, like, yeah, I maybe before last night I saw it more as a 6-game series rather than a sweep, to your point. But like, I came away from that game even more concerned about some of the reality of our first round matchup. And the reason why I feel this way is, like, every year when you get to that first weekend, that first Saturday, Sunday slate where you get eight playoff games, every single year I'm sitting on my couch watching those games and I'm like, oh my God, this is like a different sport than the regular season because of how physical and intense it gets. And the example that I always give when I'm trying to, like, reference this dynamic is the Minnesota Phoenix matchup from 2 years ago, the year that Minnesota upset Denver and Luka went to the finals with Dallas. If you remember that year, Phoenix really kicked the crap out of Minnesota all year. I think they swept them 4-0, if I remember correctly. And even on the final weekend of the regular season, and what was a very important game because Minnesota had a shot. If I remember correctly, Minnesota had a shot for the one seed, and I think they slipped to two or three. I can't remember exactly which spot it was. But it was an important game for Minnesota, and Phoenix beat the crap out of them, like beat them bad. And I want to say it was in Minnesota, if I remember correctly. And I remember I came away from that series and I did my series preview and I'm like, here's their game plan. They're going to run deep drop on Mike Conley and try to force him to be a scorer. They're going to run high drop on Ant, try to force him to be a passer. You know, they're going to try this on defense. They're going to try that. And, like, Phoenix is going to win and here's why. And then all of a sudden they were up in KD's jersey and Devin Booker's jersey in game one of that series. And they physically mauled the Suns. There was nothing they could do about it, and they got swept. They got swept, like, badly, right? And then I would even take the Minnesota Lakers matchup last year as a similar example, to where I know I picked the Lakers. Did you pick the Lakers against Minnesota last year?
Yeah, I picked Lakers in six. I felt I was a little bit lower than consensus on the series because most people, I think the most popular pick was Lakers in five. I was one of those idiots.
Yeah.
I was like, the physicality scares me a little bit, but, like, I'll go six. And then, yeah, I mean, I was wrong too, though, obviously.
Yeah. The point being, though, is, like, you get in there and it's like, oh crap, the physicality goes up a level. And actually, the bigger, better athletes just thrive better in that environment. And so I left that game with, like, let's go with the best case scenario. So the best case scenario is, like, it's really just a severe cramp or a very mild strain. And Luka's actually able to ramp up in the play-in week to where he's conditioned and more or less ready to go for game one, even if he's not in the best rhythm, right? Another slightly more realistic scenario is, like, he's out the legit full 2 weeks and he joins at some point during the first round series. And then there's obviously a likelihood that he misses the first round series entirely, right? But let's say one of those first two situations comes to fruition and the Lakers do have Luka for at least part, if not all, of the first round series. I don't care if it's Houston or if it's Minnesota. It's going to be Dante DiVincenzo. It's going to be Julius Randle and Jaden McDaniels getting right up in everyone's jersey, depending on how Jaden's knee is doing. It's going to be Anthony Edwards getting up in everyone's jersey. It's going to be Amen Thompson, Tari Eason, all these guys just ball pressuring the hell out of these Lakers ball handlers in a more physical, more intense, harder playing, tighter whistle environment. And so I came away from that game last night thinking, like, this Laker team, this is a bigger demon than just the Oklahoma City thing. Like, they need to be able to handle a level of athletic imposition when they get into these super intense environments, because, like, that was about as close to playoff basketball as you'll see last night. That punch that Oklahoma City threw, like, they just were so keyed in rotation. I love the point you made about Rui and Luke. Rui had some ugly misses. Luke, his misses were close because he's such a good shooter, but you could see him, like, get a little squirrely with his form. Like you said, you saw him just get a little weird with his feet, a little weird with his follow through. Rui had this one at the top of the key where LeBron had it on the right wing and Shea was one pass away and Shea's kind of digging down into LeBron's left-hand driving lane. And LeBron just throws a simple swing pass to Rui and really elevates. And Shea just threw a hard closeout. He just threw a playoff closeout. That's all it was. And Shea's a very good athlete, but he's not the type of, like, lightning fast, you know, perimeter fly around defender kind of guy. He just got a good contest on Rui, good playoff contest. And Rui damn near put a hole in the backboard because of how much he got disrupted by that contest. And so I came away from that game thinking, like, the Lakers have some demons they have to conquer, even if they're going to win a first round series, let alone anything having to do with Oklahoma City.
putting the big three to the side, because we don't know where things are going to be with Luka, obviously. And I will say this about Austin. I thought he had, that might have been his worst just 3-minute stretch of the season, which came at the worst possible time. I do think he bounced back and he led the team in scoring 14 in the first half and overall 14 points of 5-for-7 shooting. Like, I thought he started to find his groove. And honestly, what I think he concluded was like, I can't pass against this team. So shoot. I'm just going to, seriously. And like, that's a problem. So, that's maybe a more optimistic, like glass half full take on it. But I thought after the first 3 minutes, he looked much more comfortable and was able to get downhill and shot create. Neither, like, he bullied Kayson Wallace on a couple of those drives. He actually leveraged his size against him, and then he also drew some switches against their bigs and beat them off the dribble. Like, I felt oddly better about them attacking the bigs in a way. Like, when they were able to draw the switch and attack them off the dribble, they were able to do some good things. It's really hard to attack, like, when their guards are keeping you in front of them. Like, they weren't really able to create that separation. But putting the big three to the side, the only role player I felt like decent about was Jake. And like, Jake didn't shoot the ball well, but he had 8 rebounds, he had a few steals, he had the hard foul on Lu Dort, which, like, you don't want to see anybody get hurt, but I thought that was a hard playoff type foul on a drive. Jake was the one guy who looked like he belonged out there. Everybody else, it felt like, Luke, they were targeting him relentlessly defensively. And they blew by him multiple times and were able to just power through him. DA, we talked about it. I just thought it was a disaster first quarter performance. That, like, Austin got a lot of the heat, deservedly so, but DA, if not for Austin's turnovers, I think it would have been more the spotlight on DA and how bad he was. Then Rui came in and just looked like he was playing at 100 miles per hour in a bad way. So, yeah, I came away from that game more concerned with, like, okay, sure, first round, let's say optimistically Luka's back, they can still win a first round series, but get to San Antonio and OKC and how those two teams play, I just think they're both a really bad matchup with their defensive style and defensive personnel to the Lakers, because, OKC is a different, San Antonio is a different challenge with Wemby, that guy closing out on a lot of these guys, or, that walling off the paint, turning LA into more of a jump shooting team. I would be concerned with that. But did last night, I guess to bring this full circle, like, did last night change how you view the Lakers in the hierarchy of the West, in the hierarchy of the league? Or was this, yes, it was disappointing, and like, maybe in the OKC matchup specifically, you're less confident, but you still have them where they previously were?
So real quick, one small follow-up on the Austin piece, like, because people are making good points in the sense that, like, all those turnovers happen in the very, very early part of the game. My thing is, like, it sets a tone.
I agree. It buried them. Like, once they were down 18-4, the game was over. They were not coming back at that point.
Exactly. Like, there's a certain amount of, like, you have to come out in the opening possessions and apply a certain amount of pressure on the other team. So, like, one of the biggest things that I have always believed, and I know that a lot of the basketball nerds disagree with me about this, but I feel very strongly that I'm right about this. Shooting variance is pretty far down on the list for me of what causes shot result. It's part of it. It's a make or miss league. I don't want to sit here and pretend like it doesn't play a role at all, but I think there are a lot of different things that play a role. For instance, like, how uncomfortable are you making a team in every phase of the game? How much are you wearing a team's legs out in every phase of the game? I think confidence plays a massive role. I think Oklahoma City going up 18-4 makes it so that those spot up threes just feel like, oh, we're kicking the shit out of the Lakers. These are easy shots for us. They feel different. Whereas if it's 12-12, those shots have a little bit more pressure because it feels like a tightly contested competitive game. I think there's very much a if I'm listing all the things that lead to shot result, I'm getting to like 4 different things before I get to like variance, even though I think variance is part of it. And so it really felt to me like Oklahoma City just feels like we're way better than the Lakers, and so we're going to shoot well against these guys. That's like an actual dynamic that I feel. Now, to the question that you had earlier, I don't think this is last year's team. Last year's team lost to Minnesota, but they were in every game. They easily could have won game three, and that was with Luka playing awful with the flu. They easily could have won game four if Anthony Edwards didn't just go absolutely nuclear with this pull-up three-point shooting in the fourth quarter. Game one was the one where they got completely outclassed. Game five was a game where they got completely outclassed. But the Lakers also pretty much controlled start to finish game two. So, like, they could have won last year's series if some things had gone differently, or at least they could have extended it to six or seven games. So, like, I think this is a better team. I'm going to frame your question in the light of Luka being healthy and ready to go. If Luka is healthy and ready to go, I would still make them slight favorites in the first round series against either of Houston or Minnesota. But I definitely view them as a lot more vulnerable in those series than I did before last night's game. And in general, I have a lot less hope for a San Antonio and Oklahoma City matchup.
Agreed. Speaking of Luka, I mean, we've danced around it a little bit here, but if he is out, so there's, as you said, it could be a tweak or like a slight reaggravation that maybe he's out a few. I mean, at this point, we have 8 days left in the regular season. I think it would be foolish to play him again. Like the one thing would be to keep him eligible for awards. Although we saw today in ESPN's straw poll that after the month he just had, he still finished fourth in MVP voting. So despite our conversations about where Luka should be in the top two or the top three, he still is fourth among the primary voters. So I mean, don't see him winning MVP this season. And this injury also, I mean, if he doesn't play again, he's ineligible. So that's the thing we have to touch on too. Like Luka has played 64 games and he would need to play a 65th game to qualify for MVP and first team All-NBA. So maybe he plays one more game. If you know, maybe they play against Utah, he plays like the first half and then they pull him. So he's eligible. I think he'd have to play 20 minutes in that game, if I'm not mistaken. Or there's a certain percentage of games you have to play 20 minutes. But that aside, like putting the, because that's ultimately not important. What's important is his health and what that means for the Lakers' future here. I think we probably rule him out for the rest of the regular season. I'd be pretty surprised if he's back again, with maybe the exception of like one game. So with that, like this does put the Lakers in jeopardy of potentially dropping to number four. Because if you look at their schedule, without Luka, I think they lose to OKC again. And then I think losing to Phoenix is on the table. I think even with Luka, losing to Phoenix is on the table just based on how that matchup has gone. Phoenix is 3-1 against them this season. And then Golden State's getting Steph back and they're trying to ramp up for their little play-in push and maybe to try to be the 8 seed. So looking at the Lakers schedule, if you tell me Luka's out the next 5 games and you also look at the lineup data of with Luka off the floor post All-Star break, they've been outscored by 5 points per 100 possessions. It's a 16-point swing. He's been at an MVP level on-off differential, plus 11 on the floor, minus 5 off. I think it gets a little dicey here where the Lakers could go 2-3 or 3-2. And if they go 2-3 or 3-2, they're probably the 4 seed at that point with Denver's schedule. I think Denver's going to go 4-1 or 5-0 to close the season, especially with OKC potentially locking up the 1 seed as soon as that next Lakers game. So it gets a little tricky there. And then now you're putting yourself on the OKC side of the bracket and you're playing a team that, you know, Houston and Minnesota have been jockeying. So like whichever one's the 5 seed theoretically has been playing a little bit better, that they've been able to distance themselves right now. That'd be Houston. So maybe it actually works out where they play Houston in round one and it's like an easier matchup, but then you run into OKC in round two. And I do think you suffer an untimely death at that point.
Yeah, you know, to be very clear, if Luka misses 3-4 games here, even which I think it's more likely than not that he misses the rest of the regular season. If Luka misses 3-4 games, by the way, real quickly, I can't remember who it was, but I saw that the NBA might have an exception for a late season injury for the 65 game.
So did you see that? It's you can play 62 games, but at the time that you this just sucks for Luka. At the time you get injured, you have to have played 85% of your team's games, and Luka's played 83% of the Lakers' games. So if this had happened one game ago, I think Luka would have technically been eligible, even if it had been like 63 games instead. But because he's at under 85% of the games played, he would not be eligible.
Interesting. And so he'd have to play 20 minutes no matter what. Yeah, to your point, I could see a universe where they kind of run him out there like a James Harden on the Nets decoy for 20 minutes in one of those games. But like, it would have to be in a late season game. That's interesting. But anyway, let's assume he misses all but one of the games the rest of the season. They're going to be the four seed. Like that's going to happen. Denver's schedule is too easy. And I to your point, like I don't see a universe where they can beat Oklahoma City on Tuesday unless Oklahoma City sits their guys. And even then, that's not a guarantee with how especially Austin and DeAndre Ayton have struggled in this matchup. The Suns game, you know, like they have Dylan Brooks now back. They're more or less operating at full strength minus Mark Williams. So, like, yeah, I think they're going to be the four seed. Now, let me flip this back on you, though, Jovan, because, like, let's assume that this is a 2+ week injury for Luka, and his best case scenario is coming back mid late first round, but potential miss the entire first round. And we have to talk about which of the Houston Minnesota group LeBron and Austin are most capable of beating. And I know that on its surface, it would be very easy to be like, oh, Minnesota, Austin's beat Minnesota this year. He can handle that. And I get that, but one, we talked about Minnesota's ability to kind of leverage their athleticism. But two, we know what Minnesota did against us in the first round last year. They switched with Gobert. In their regular season matchups this year, they've run drop. With the regular season drop, that plays into Austin's strengths. Austin is a very good drop coverage beater. Both LeBron and Austin, I think, would struggle against a switching scheme. If I needed LeBron and Austin to win a series to buy Luka a month to get back, I want to play against a team that's going to be playing Reed Shepard and Alperen Şengün a lot. Now, the flip side there would be, well, what about Amen Thompson? But even then, one, give me enough time with Austin on Amen. I think he might be able to solve that puzzle a little bit just by using screens. And then two, LeBron at least would have the opportunity to attack those two guys in various different ways. So, like, I almost look at it as like a, if you slip to four, Houston's on this four-game win streak. Jaden McDaniels is out now too with this like patellar knee tendinosis thing that he's dealing with. And now you could flip that around and be like, well, what if Jaden McDaniels misses the first round series? But I think I still would be a little more scared of Minnesota than I would of Houston. So, like, falling into a 4-5, even though it puts you on the OKC side of the bracket, might line up easier for like a, oh, we need to win a series without Luka. What's LeBron and Austin's best path? Give me a series where they have multiple entry points to attack a defense like that Houston team. I think they have a better chance against Houston to win without Luka than they do against Minnesota. So in a weird way, slipping into the 4-5 might actually be the best thing that could happen to them.
I agree from a first round perspective. Yeah. And just in a vacuum, I'd rather play Houston than Minnesota. I was thinking about this last night as well. I also think we can't overlook the track record here where Minnesota's been to back-to-back Western Conference Finals. They've already beaten the Lakers. And with no shade to KD, I would still be more scared to play this version of Anthony Edwards in the first round than this current version of Kevin Durant in the first round, right? And I mean, the Lakers had a lot of success with some pretty basic traps and doubles against KD, and Houston just doesn't really have a point guard. I think Amen Thompson has grown as a ball handler and playmaker this season. I think Reed Shepard has given them a nice infusion in the starting group recently, but he is a massive defensive liability that I think the Lakers could pick on. So yeah, between the two, I trust Minnesota's offense more in the playoffs, and I trust their defense a little bit more in like a playoff context. So I think they're a team that's more built for the playoffs, and based on their prior success, like, I mean, we are splitting hairs here. Lakers went 3-0 against Minnesota in the regular season, 2-1 against Houston in the regular season. But there's something for me more psychological. Like, I don't know. I think two of the three wins against Minnesota had Luka in them. And I know technically the two wins in Houston did, but there's just something to it of I think Luka warps the Minnesota matchup in a way that then allows the Lakers to play with advantage. And like he did that too against Houston, but I just, there's something about it where I could more easily envision Minnesota like enveloping the Lakers and just strangling their offense. compared to Houston. And then even if they're neither team is able to do that, and let's just say Austin's balling out, it's like November, December, Austin, LeBron is playing playoff LeBron basketball. Even then, I'm still more scared of Minnesota's offense and the combination of Ant and Randall compared to KD and Şengün. So I think it is like Houston's playing better. I think that gap might, and with the McDaniels uncertainty, it might be like a little bit closer than it was a couple weeks ago, a few weeks ago, whatever. But still, I would prefer Houston. Now, I don't think the Lakers have any shot against OKC in round two. I think they have a slim shot against San Antonio. So like if we're talking about best playoff path, I still might take my chances against Minnesota and then San Antonio. But I think they could still beat Houston. It's just, I think that, like, hey, Luka, you just missed a month. Let's go into OKC for game one. Like that's not really a great situation.
No, you're absolutely right. It's weird because like on the one hand, they're drawing dead against both of those teams without Luka. So I think of it more of like just a how do you survive the first round piece. I mean, the best possible outcome if Minnesota gets the five is like the Lakers somehow scrap together the upset of the century on Tuesday. And then Oklahoma City drops one more game. San Antonio wins out. San Antonio jumps up to the one seed. The Lakers drop to four. Then you get 4-5 with Houston, and then you play San Antonio in round two. But like the scenario we talked about where the Lakers end up holding on to the three seed and playing San Antonio in round two, that it's just really difficult for me to see that coming to fruition. I will say the one thing, this is the luxury of having LeBron in Austin. LeBron is nowhere near the shot creator he used to be, but he's capable of doing a lot more of it than he has over the course of the last month, and he can kind of slot up into a more on-ball role. So the Lakers, in theory, are set up in a way where they can float the ship a little better than you would think. I just think they've got some tough games on the horizon between that Phoenix game, between that Oklahoma City game. It's just, it's really tough. I mean, I will say Denver, San Antonio could do Denver a big favor by winning on Saturday. If San Antonio wins on Saturday, then the Lakers can lose two additional games the rest of the way. So they could theoretically lose the OKC game and the Phoenix game and still keep the three seed. So all you Laker fans should definitely be rooting for San Antonio on Saturday. If they win that game, Lakers have an outside shot to hold on to three, but then we're talking about Minnesota as a first round matchup, which comes with its own kind of like set of potential downsides.
And then final one before we take a quick break and then get into the Q&A. If Luka's out for an extended period here, which again, it feels like at least the regular season, if not potentially into the playoffs, who would be your ideal replacement fifth starter? Because I think I would go Jake LaRavia at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I know that they're
taking like, Marcus.
It is, this is the understatement of the century. It is a massive downgrade to go from Luka Doncic to Jake LaRavia in your starting lineup offensively, but I like the Jake fit a little bit more than the Rui fit. And particularly, I don't love the DA LeBron Rui front court defensively. And then you combine that with Austin. It's just putting a lot on Marcus to carry a certain load that I think I would go Jake as the fifth starter.
To kind of expand on that point too, like I think you really got to lean into being good on defense if Luka's out. Like that's the thing you've got to look at is like that Austin, Marcus, Jake, LeBron, Ayton lineup has an opportunity to be like a pretty good two-way lineup. And I think that like one, you slot Austin as your third best perimeter defender, which allows you to not necessarily hide him, but hide him more than you would under normal circumstances. Then you can lean heavily into Austin as a heavy usage on-ball player, ask him to kind of fill that gap. I'm 100% with you. If you put Rui in there, now Austin's your second best perimeter defender. It just becomes a lot more complicated. I'm 100% with you. I'd go Austin, Marcus, Jake, LeBron, Ayton if Luka's out.
All right. Before we get into the Q&A, going to take a quick break to read a prize picks ad, and then we will get back into your questions. No matter what sport you're watching, there is no better way to make the action more exciting than Prize Picks, where it always feels good to be right. Prize Picks is a daily fantasy made simple. You just pick more or less on your favorite players' projections and build your lineup in a few taps. Whether it's basketball, baseball, or college basketball, anything else you're locked into just gives you another reason to stay tapped in every single play. And honestly, that's my favorite part. Like, even if you're watching a random game, once you got a lineup going, you are now locked in. Every possession matters. I've been mixing in different sports too. You could throw a couple basketball picks, maybe something from another game, and just ride it out all night. Makes everything way more fun. And they've got some really cool features too. You can actually cash out early if your picks are going crazy. You can mix multiple sports in one lineup. And there's a community aspect, so you can see what other people are playing and even tail their picks. Download the Prize Picks apps today and use code HMA to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code HMA to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, it's good to be right. All right, let's get into the Q&A. I screenshotted the first couple of super chats that came in before the show started. So first one here from Cesar. With Luka out, AR will be run into the ground. Do you think they should just punt the three seed for rest? If Denver loses Saturday, the third is likely, but do you rest instead? So I want to broaden this question here because there has been a lot of backlash on JJ Redick and in him playing Luka into the third quarter when it was a 31-point game at halftime. The game was clearly over. JJ said post-game that they worked out Luka at halftime. We saw some footage of them working on his hamstring, that the medical team cleared him, and that JJ said he was going to give the starters 6 minutes to try to go on some sort of run, and if they didn't do that, he was going to pull them, and that he was a minute away from pulling Luka from the game. But this has been something we've been talking about for a while, me especially. I've been harping on the minutes load has been unsustainable. Austin had 10 straight games of 37 or more minutes. Luka had a stretch of 9 of 10 of 37 or more minutes. Even in some of their blowouts, JJ has not trusted the bench and played these guys into the early to mid fourth quarter when you'll see, I mean, OKC, it's not really a fair comparison because of their depth, but like if OKC has a big lead, Shea's not touching the fourth quarter. And same thing with Wemby, sometimes with Jokic as well, or maybe he'll play like 2 minutes into the fourth and then they pull him. So I guess to broaden this conversation here, like, where are you at with some of the blame going on JJ or the team for playing Luka in the third quarter, if at all? And is there an element here of like this catching up this past month of the Lakers have been playing like playoff level basketball in terms of their rotation, the minutes, for almost a month here, like at least 3 weeks, starting with that New York, Minnesota range of the season. And I do feel like it's kind of come back and reared its head. And like Austin was banged up in the first half. LeBron was banged up in the first half. Like they look like they're kind of running out of gas at this point of the season. And then of course we now see Luka get hurt. And it's like, it's hard to not feel like that didn't play any role in that.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. I think your criticism is valid, which is the minute load has been too insane for the last month and change. That to me, like, I just think that's very valid criticism. And I think we would all be foolish to pretend as though that hasn't played a role in Luka's injury. Where I disagreed with people was everyone specifically getting mad at them for bringing Luka out for the third quarter. The idea of punting a game at halftime, that almost never happens in the NBA, even when a team is down 30 plus. It almost always is exactly like JJ described. Like, let's give the starters one more shift. Let's see if they can salvage some dignity. And then if they make it a game, sure. But like, if they're still down 25, then we'll call this a night, right? Like, that to me was par for the course for what you'd almost expect to see in any sort of environment like this. And quite frankly, like, I don't think, to be clear, I'm not saying Luka faked his injury last night. He clearly got hurt. He gave up the basketball. Like, you don't give up the basketball if you're not hurt. But throughout this entire season and the end of last season and dating back to when he was with the Mavs in his title run, like in the year that he won, that he went all the way to within three wins of the championship in 2024, during that playoff run, Luka periodically grimaces and grabs to lower body parts. He just does. So I think it's kind of revisionist history for us to be like, oh, he was clearly favoring his hamstring. He's been favoring his hamstring off and on for years. Various lower leg injuries for years. So like, as I was watching the game, it'd be one thing if like Luka never did that, and then he was clearly doing it and then he pulled his hamstring, then I'd call it negligence, because we'd be like, this guy never does this, and he's clearly grabbing at his hamstring, and you guys are playing him through it, and he gets hurt. So, like, this to me, like, individually within this game is more just like a injuries happen, it's not anybody's fault kind of thing. But I think the point you're making about did the Lakers sell their soul to get a 17 as an amazing, you know, what was it, 15-2 month? Like, it's possible that that played a substantial role in this injury. So, like, yeah, I think your criticism is fair. I think a lot of the stuff I saw throwing around last night, I disagree with.
Agreed. I also, I said this last night, if he was cleared, to be clear, I'm not blaming anybody. I think this is just one of those instances in which he tweaked his hamstring. Like, it's sort of, you can't necessarily predict that, but if you're going to blame anybody, I would say that's maybe more on the medical staff for clearing him. And then if you clear the guy and a few minutes later he gets injured, that's like not the best look. But even within that, you have played college basketball. Like, if you were dealing with a hamstring injury and you get cleared by your medical staff and your coach is like, well, Jason, I think we should sit you for the second half. Like, you're going to tell him to F off. And then when you're like the superstar of the team and one of the best players, if not the best player in the league, like, that's just in my 15 years covering the NBA, like, it's just not how this goes, where you just tell a dude like, hey, you're going to sit this out, and the competitive juices are flowing and you want to at least give it one more shot in the third quarter to see if you can make a run. And I feel like it's as simple as that. Like, if he's cleared by the medical staff, he's going to play. Maybe JJ could have pushed back more on that. But again, if I think if there's anyone here, it's like, should they have cleared him? And that's a separate conversation. But yeah, so then we got a couple.
To play. Like, even Victor, like, I saw a lot of people criticizing Victor. You think Victor wanted to sit out last night? Hell no. That's his medical staff. Like, I'm with you. The medical staff is the group to look at here.
Next one from LeBronky asks, could it be that slim Luka is more susceptible to OKC's ball pressure than 2024 playoffs Luka and last year's bigger Luka?
Absolutely not. Like, no chance. I think in general, Luka has looked much better. Like, the best example I give is Jaden McDaniels. Fat Luka last year really struggled with Jaden. Luka has torched Jaden McDaniels this year.
Yeah, and I also think about the Houston game with him splitting double teams, getting downhill. I was mentioning it on my show last night. Like, I think he had really struck the right harmony in March between the inside-outside game and the cat-and-mouse game of getting downhill, putting pressure on the defense, and then, okay, you know, you're going to cheat over with your big. Here's the lob pass. Okay, big's going to cheat over. Now the low man rotates over. I'm going to hit you in the corner. Or, okay, now you're expecting the drive. I'm going to accelerate, decel, step back, hit the three in your face. Like, he just had, that's like the beauty of his game, that he could attack you in a variety of ways, and no matter what you throw at him, he has an answer for it. But last night it did feel like, this would be one of the criticisms with the whole like health thing, is that he just was, 7 of his 9 shots in the first half were threes. Most of those were contested step back threes, and it didn't look like he had any interest in even trying to drive. And part of that could be some of the habits from like earlier in the season, but I also felt like part of it was like physically, he just was like, I don't really have my legs right now, so I'm just going to have to take a bunch of threes.
There was a weirdness from the beginning of that game where, like, that first shot he took, he looked like surprised by the Isaiah Hartenstein contest, and he shot that like air ball that was literally like 4 feet short of the rim. And then he had a couple of step backs where he got like no separation and shot him. Like, it kind of like to be clear, before the injury, before he even started favoring his hamstring, Luka looked unprepared for Oklahoma City as well. So like it was kind of like a team-wide, like, we're not ready for this intense of a basketball game thing that I think is almost separate from the injury. But like, especially when like he looked fantastic against Cleveland, like literally fantastic. So that was a little hard for me to kind of rectify when I was watching the game.
Next one from Trushy 89. After watching last night, we really need some wings. This is a question that someone asked me last night. Like, Do you think after last night, the bigger need for the Lakers is the center spot or the wing spot? And I still come back to the wing spot. I think they need both. I would like a better starting center and more wing depth. But aside from Jake's random hot shooting nights, which he's had a couple of over the last few weeks, he's primarily a defensive player and on a group that needs defense. That has been valuable. And he's a dirty work guy. He does the little things. But Jake is more of a one-way player in this form of him where he just has not. I don't know if you saw, there was, I think it was NBA University tweeted it out yesterday that among players with a certain, I think it might be like 100 or more threes attempted on the season of wide open threes, Jake LaRavia is last in the NBA shooting 31.5% on wide open threes. So like he has just not lived up to the shooting he showed last season. He's a one-way dude. We know Rui and Luke are both one-way dudes. And we know Vando's a one-way dude. So when you just look at the perimeter group, and even Bronny, I think at this point, I mean, Kayson Wallace, like he could not dribble the basketball against him.
I think Bronny, for Bronny though. That was,
it was
like
good reps to be thrown into that fire.
Yeah.
And like, I thought he looked better in the fourth quarter and like he started to figure things out. But like in like the, I loosely use the term competitive portion of the game. Like he's not like at this point, a lead ball handler playmaker, right? Like I think he's more of a secondary guy who can be like point of attack defensively and then more of an off ball guy or shooter offensively. But like really the Lakers perimeter guys are all one way dudes outside of Marcus, who's been shooting almost 40% on three since January 1st. And then we know about the defensive side. So like they need, I think, to revamp that portion of like, there's been a lot of talk about who they're going to keep. I don't really think it makes sense to keep both Rui and Luke. I think you need that level of shooting, but I don't know already if you have Luka and Austin as your base. I don't know if I want to keep adding in like more one-way players into the rotation surrounding them. Like you need defenders and two-way guys, excuse me. So like, I think looking at next season's group, like, they need more wings and specifically two-way wings, not just any wings, like two-way wings.
I agree with you. I just think there's a two-phase part to this where like they need better role players. Their role players got outclassed last night. But I also think they have if Luka and Austin can't get into the offense against OKC, it doesn't matter who's on the rest of the team. Like that got me a little concerned last night. Like, I hate to bring back up the, like, is Austin the long-term fit here thing, but, like, I'm with you.
We're going to get to that in the Q&A. We got some questions on that.
Go ahead and bring the question up.
Like, so this one from True to This Not New. We've known AR isn't a true number two. If you can't perform against the teams that you will have to beat a chip in the Luka era, you aren't a number two.
You're going to sign Austin no matter what. I would give him a full additional year after this. So I wouldn't trade him until, not unless some like obvious trade materialized, but like I wouldn't trade him until after next year's playoff run. But if after next year's playoff run, he just can't figure it out against this level of opponent, like San Antonio and Oklahoma City aren't going anywhere. They're just not. They are the barrier to entry if you want to win the Western Conference. So like there's a certain amount of like, and I'm with, this is why I say I'd give him another year. I'm a huge believer in Austin. I love that dude. And I'm with you, Jovan, where like this year's been kind of interesting where like he kind of has been a guy who's started games shitty and then kind of figured things out as they've progressed. That I thought that happened a lot on the road trip, where he had like a really brutal, the Orlando game was a great example. Like he was driving me crazy in the first half of the Orlando game. And then he was like our best player in the second half. So like Austin solves problems. He shit the bed to start the Oklahoma City game last night and then started to kind of figure things out, albeit in the less competitive portion of the game. But like I bet on Austin, but here's the thing. There's a very like clear barrier to entry that he's not ready for yet. And there comes a time where, like, if he doesn't get there by a certain amount of time, the Lakers have to consider making some sort of big picture shift in the way this team is built. I'm not there yet, but, like, last night was, like, another clear sign that, like, he's not ready. And, like, maybe I would bet on Austin. I'm hopeful that he can figure it out. But, like, it was clear again to me last night that, like, oh, he's not ready for this.
Tyler follows up with, we need guys like Grimes, DeSumo, Kelly Oubre, Watson, Ellis, etc. around Luka and AR. Jake ain't a rotation level guy on most playoff teams. Again, I mean, and we didn't really touch on this. Like, I thought they really missed Marcus Smart last night.
Yeah.
I think now OKC was without Alex Caruso. So if we're going to say Marcus is theoretically back, like Caruso is sure, dealing with Caruso. An illness. And he killed the Lakers in both of the first couple games. And I think he's one of the rare guys who can't switch across all of their big three, right? Like, I think you could put him on Luka, Austin, and LeBron.
Yep.
And I just think that was a big piece to the rotation. That I also think then it if you are going with Marcus and Jake together against OKC, now you could put Marcus on Shea and Jake on J-Dub, who I actually thought J-Dub killed the Lakers last night. Like, I know Shea had the nearly, you know, 28-7-7 and you didn't have the most efficient night, but still I thought was the best player on the floor. But like, J-Dub was pretty good. He had 8 assists. He nearly had a triple double. He, like, the Lakers had no answer for him off the dribble either. So I think putting Jake on J-Dub, because Jake was the primary Shea guy, like Jake on J-Dub, Marcus on Shea, I think that is like more closer matchups to what they should be. But
maybe we'll,
I agree in general. I think I'm in a little bit lower on Grimes than consensus. I think he's more of a bench player than a starter. I mean, half these guys, I think, are more bench players than starters. But DeSumo, I think, is depends on the roster construction. Kelly Oubre, I think, is more of a bench player. Watson is a starter. Ellis, I think, more of a bench player. But, like, I would take any of these guys, to be clear. I just think it depends on the money and what the role that's promised is.
Yeah, I mean, they clearly need to get, like I thought last night was the first time over the last month and a half where I was like, oh, they're completely outclassed athletically. And I think the specific thing that OKC brought that was different than, like, Detroit is fast, but they're more on the big side than fast. Orlando's definitely more on the big side than fast. Houston's definitely more on the big side than fast. Oklahoma City is just fast, and it is just really, really difficult for the Lakers to match up with that. So they definitely need speed. I just, again, go to, like, I don't care if you would have had Jaden McDaniels at the three and Aaron Gordon at the four and Nick Claxton at the five. They would have got their ass beat last night if Luka and Austin can't get into the offense. So, like, there's a certain amount of, like, they've got to find some way to handle this kind of pressure or they're dead on arrival.
And we've buried the lead here. The elephant in the room that we have not yet discussed has been Jason's hair. So we had a couple of comments. DWS, Jason got a haircut. We instantly get spanked on national TV. Coincidence? I think not. And then, more appropriately, Melissa says, oh my gosh, I love your new look. You look much younger and accentuates your handsome face. Great job. And Melissa did throw me a compliment, so I'll throw that one up. Jason looks marvelous. So does Jovan, the best podcasters. Appreciate
Melissa,
that.
Very sweet. Thank you so much.
So some people were asking if you had your hair back. And to be clear, you got a haircut.
Nope, it's gone. It's all gone, guys.
It's gone. Looks good.
It's all gone.
Fresh cut.
Yeah, I got my hair cut by a 70-year-old Armenian lady. She was super sweet. She had an incredible story. Her life story was absolutely amazing. But I thought she did a great job. Like I said, I was kind of torn between a couple of different styles. I ended up going with something a little bit longer, but I actually really like it. I'm really happy with it. It's super much easier to manage than the long hair situation. And it's like weird. Every once in a while, I'll just be walking around my house and I'll catch like a glimpse of myself in the mirror and I'll be like, ah, who's that guy? But like, so it's a little weird because I literally didn't cut my hair for 2 years. There was the ad read for Hoops Tonight is for this last week is like me with long hair. And that is like kind of shocking to see. So like it definitely is weird, but it was time. It was time for a change. And I'm looking forward to the more practical lifestyle that I'll have over the coming years.
Next one from Lakers 702. Which two players would you bring back that could share the MLE? So if the Lakers use cap space, they will be only eligible to use the room exception. They will not have the full non-taxpayer mid-level exception. So that's actually only $9 million. So maybe you could split that between
Marcus
Jackson
gotta
and
be
Luke.
One.
Well, I was going to say, I think Marcus might have outplayed that range. I think, Marcus, if you told me somewhere between 10 to 15 million, I think that's pretty fair value for a guy who's.
Do you think his injury at the end of the season might have cut his value a little bit?
Potentially. I mean, I would prefer to probably pay him closer to like 10 to 12 million. I think once you get to the 15, it's a little, or 15, if you're going to do 15, like 2 year, like, you know, 2 years, 30 million. And it's just, okay, we're keep like, regardless of the contract, I would want it shorter with Marcus just because of, you don't know how he's going to continue to age. And this has been a recurring thing where with his playing style, he's just so susceptible to nicks and acts and being banged up. I mean, I guess we're just saying which two players. So I think Austin and Jackson, they'll use the bird rights on. And so they'll keep both those guys, and they don't have to make decisions on those guys within the framework of the 50 million. You have the whole LeBron situation, which I think is trending toward him being back, but like, you just don't know what he's like. He could retire. We don't really know what he officially wants to do yet. I guess in general, if it's, let's put LeBron to the side. If we're looking more at the role players, I guess it comes down to Rui, Luke, and Marcus. I would prioritize Marcus clearly among those three. And then between the two, I might lean Luke just because of the price. I think his price will be somewhere around half of Rui's price. And if it's Luke at 7 versus Rui at like 14, 15, I might prefer Luke and to spend the rest of that money elsewhere. But I don't know.
I also just generally think Rui is a more replaceable player in the sense that Luke brings a very unique skill set in that he's just such a good closeout attacker, three-point shooter, that he kind of just like gels together with a bunch of lineups. A big forward that can only hit completely wide open shots and one dribble pull-ups, but that can't really pass, that's kind of a bad rebounder, that's not a good read and react player on both ends of the floor in terms of like making reads on offense or just kind of defensive attentiveness. Like, Rui is a player that like I've grown to really like just through rooting for him over the years, and he's certainly had his moments, but like he hasn't really shown progress in the key areas that I think are important for him to be like a starting caliber player. And if he's not a starting caliber player, I don't think you can be paying him $14 million like you had mentioned.
Yeah, I think he's regressed this year in several ways that have been disappointing. Next one from Yoshi. Thank you for the super chat. I know this isn't the majority of OKC fans, but it made me sad and angry to see that one fan mock Luka while he was down with the injury. Yeah, that was bullshit.
I feel bad for NBA players, man. Like these people that go to these games and just get drunk and act like absolute fools. Like, be a fucking grown up, man. What the hell is your problem? Like, especially when you're down by the floor like that, you're literally around a bunch of people that have worked extremely hard and invested their hard-earned money to go watch their favorite NBA players play. And these players are out there just trying to compete, and you're out there acting like a damn fool. Like, grow the hell up, man. Grow up.
And actually, speaking of Luka, we had some news come in, while not an update on Luka, but per Tim Bontemps, he said he reported on SportsCenter that there is one way for Luka to be eligible for end of season awards. He'd have to file an extraordinary circumstances grievance over missing two games in December over the birth of his child. An arbitrator would rule on it after the regular season. So the interesting thing with that is that the regular season ends Sunday afternoon and awards are due 6 p.m. Eastern time on that Monday. So I think it's like a 24-hour period between the regular season ending and awards ballots being due. So I wonder how they handle that if this does go to arbitration. Of do they, like, is there an extension on the awards now until the Luka situation is resolved? Or do they say, like, vote as if Luka's eligible, but then if he ends up being ruled ineligible, we'll just take him off the ballot, move everybody else up? Like, I don't know how that's going to work, but I guess there is some a sliver of hope that Luka, I don't think he's going to win MVP based on the straw poll, but at least could be first team All-NBA.
That's super interesting. I didn't know that.
Next one from Dames92. Vando doesn't hang his head and would have stabilized things. JJ could pull him to space the floor, and he goes for every rebound. DA and his butter covered hands. I've given up on Vando as a rotation guy, if only because I think JJ's given up on Vando as a rotation guy. So I just don't, barring injury, which I guess now with Luka, maybe he gets back into the rotation. Like, I just don't think JJ trusts or believes in him. And yeah, I mean, I think it's that simple.
I just don't think he's the solution to our problems.
Next one from Lake Show Yo 96, from MVP candidate to MRI hashtag LePain. And then he follows up with AR turned into DK last night, inserts Spider-Man pointing meme. Lakers look completely rattled by OKC, straight punked from the start.
Did you see some of those clips of Dalton Connect's G League game?
Yeah, not he's on the JHS path right now to being out of the league. Yeah. I think comparing AR to DK is a little disrespectful.
That's a little over the top, guys. Come on.
A little over the top. He did
lead us in scoring last back. Time the first half.
He led the team in scoring. He led the team in scoring in the first half, too. Like it, I mean, it was a low bar to clear, but I think it's a little disrespectful. True to this, not new. Or first he says, here they go, excusing AR again. Pathetic. And then he follows up. AR was good after game was out of reach. Thank you, Yolan.
I don't excuse him.
I think there's nuance within the conversation, but I think it's disingenuous to say that Austin was terrible for the entirety of the first half. I think he had a terrible first 3 minutes, and then I think he was okay, but I think most of the group was, like, I don't think anyone had a good game last night, to be clear. I thought maybe LeBron was the closest, maybe. I thought attacking out of the short roll and post-ups and cuts and transition and whatnot. LeBron played with force, I will say, yeah. Which, like, not a lot of Lakers played with force last night.
He looked physically prepared.
But yeah. I just, like, if you want to just say that the first 3 minutes ruled out any positive analysis of Austin, like, you're entitled to that opinion. But he played an additional 27 minutes of the game, and I thought he was much better after that portion. And now there is an element of, I will agree that there have been some games where Austin, to your point earlier, Jason, like, has been bad in the first half, and then maybe the game's kind of out of hand, and then he puts up some numbers in the second half. I don't think that was quite the same situation here, just because, like, yes, the Lakers are down 18-4, and, like, we know the game's over, but you can't just give up out there and, like, pull the guys 3 minutes into the game and be like, all right, well, Austin, you had the worst stretch of your season to start this game. Like, okay, the game's over. Like, we can't, like, that's not how it works. So I thought Austin, he had the pull up three, then he got downhill, then he hit another three, got to the free throw line. Like, I thought he started to look progressively more comfortable. I'm not saying he had a good game. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, I think people are only looking at the first 3 minutes and, like, not, like, the Lakers played more than just the first 3 minutes. And from that point on, I think you could argue he was their best offensive player, which is a very low bar, but I think he's in that conversation.
When I said he gets better at the end of games, I meant that as a compliment too. Like, I meant, like, he can solve the puzzle. My thing is, like, the next step for him is you can't come out and be terrible in your first shift every single night. Like, that's something he's got to figure out.
Pleasers didn't think it was possible, but the season ended last night. Luka coming back hobbled to maybe win a first round series, then get swept. Tell me what team with AR as number two you'd pick over OKC, fire Rob. I think if you swapped AR in for De'Aaron Fox in San Antonio, I don't think De'Aaron Fox is a better defender than Austin. I think he's a better...
That's actually a really interesting
player. That's an interesting
if I was
one.
Playing devil's advocate, I'd say De'Aaron Fox is a better athlete and more suited to handle playoff athleticism.
I agree with that.
But on paper, yeah, like, you could argue the Spurs would be better with Austin.
But you have Wemby that, like, it's, you know, special circumstances. I do think you need to, like, if you threw him on Denver instead of Murray, I think they get worse.
There's also the institutional
knowledge between Jokic and Murray, but. Then Boston, yeah, I mean, I guess if you're replacing Tatum or Brown, like, yeah, I mean, it might only be San Antonio, but that's also because San Antonio is already close to OKC.
San Antonio is such a unique thing because it's not really just Fox. Like, they have three awesome
Castle.
Guards.
You can argue, like, Castle's their
Dylan
number two.
Dylan Harper's been amazing post deadline, but, like, Austin has technically been a more efficient pick and roll handler than Fox this year.
PRJKT playing Luka 40 minutes a game came home to roost for JJ.
We kind of talked about that.
We touched earlier on that, but, like, yeah, it's too many minutes. And then a couple more here before we wrap. Rando, let's say this year is a gap year. What are our realistic chances, even if we retool, given the OKC Spurs problem? Rookies look more NBA ready now.
I think if Luka can rectify his floor, like again, like if Luka went into that game last night, forget about the hamstring injuries, take that aside. If Luka went into that game last night and looked like the guy from March and was like 4 for his first 7 and hit 3 step-back 3s and was handling the ball pressure and getting us into our offense, like I think there's a version of that game that goes very differently. So like if Luka addresses his floor, the Lakers really have a shot against anybody because Luka's that freaking good. It's just if Luka, like Austin's not the kind of guy that's going to be able to step in and just completely fill in for Luka if he's 1 for 6 with 2 turnovers in the first quarter.
I think to your point, though, like I think Luka is that good, but I think it's more he's that good to win a game or two. I still think there's a real gap between the Lakers and these two teams. And to this point,
we're going
to
retool under the premise of this question.
I guess one source of optimism for me with the humbling of last night would just be that I think there was this. There was like a potential scenario where the Lakers kind of ran it back this summer and like maybe added one prominent piece. Like maybe you clear enough cap space for a Peyton Watson, or you sign a Lou Dort, or you trade for Dort, or you find a way to add like one starting level player. I think that would have closed the gap to a degree with these two teams, but I still think these two teams would have been clearly better than the Lakers going into next season. And I don't think they would have been on their level. So I'm hopeful that, especially with Mark Walter now in charge of everything and the way that they've run the Dodgers, it's like, no, we are not on the same, like we are not close to OKC's level. We are probably not on San Antonio's level either. We need to make some real changes this summer with the roster. And that would be my hope of adding 1 to 2 starting level players, 2 to 3 new bench player, like you know, rotation level bench guys, and then clearing out the back end of the roster and having you know more upside on the back end of the roster and or more NBA ready talent on the back end of the roster. And like, I mean, I think they need like 6 or 7 new players next year. I would be disappointed if they bring back 10 or 11 of the guys and it's like we're just tweaking like a few guys. Like I think it needs, there's certainly a core there and there's certainly some guys I think like should be back for next season, but I would like to see a little bit more substantial changes. And I'm hopeful that last night's ass kicking was a wake up call of we had a great month. We beat some really good teams, but at some point we're gonna have to go through OKC and San Antonio and we're not ready for that right now. And we need to make some moves this off season.
It proved that Luka is good enough to take you to the promised land. But like, to your point, they need like 3 or 4 more really good players than they have, or they're drawing dead against these upper level teams.
JR Medrano, thank you for the super chat. When it comes to building the team this offseason, what's the team philosophy you want the team to buy into, especially if Braun, Luka, AR stay intact?
This one thing I wanted to quickly hit here, like there's this idea, it's like, oh, the dynasty starts after LeBron because he makes $50 million. And it's like, even if LeBron takes a pay cut next year, Austin Reeves is taking a massive pay increase, and it may not be to the exact same extent, but like the Lakers are still going to have to fill the roster with relatively discounted players. And so like it is tricky. And this is where being bad in the draft, like literally chops you off at the knees. Like get it. If Adu Thierro can't play because his knee is messed up, and Dalton Connect can't play because he's not an NBA player, and Jalen Uchifino can't play because he's not an NBA player, you're drawn dead because those are the guys that are filling. You want to know why San Antonio and Oklahoma City have so many damn good players? They have a bunch of dudes on rookie contracts.
And you know what reminded me of this, like this was, you know, an aside to the game, but like watching Tristan Da Silva, and that was the guy the Lakers were considering at that Dalton Connect spot. They were between Da Silva and Misi, and either one of those guys would have been a much better fit. But like seeing Tristan Da Silva and what he could do at that size and with that athleticism, I mean, just throw that guy on this team. And I mean, I think he's above Jake in the rotation.
He's starting at the 3 right now.
I mean, yeah, he might be starting over Marcus or at least playing, a big bench role. So yeah. I mean, that stinks. And then final one here from Tyler K. Will you guys make a draft video on who to draft?
When we get there.
I think once we get there and have a little bit more clarity on the Lakers pick, and I think that would certainly be post playoffs, whenever the playoffs end for the Lakers. We could do some research and do a video on that.
Better version of Rui, he'd be an interesting guy where like I'd be like, oh, we could draft a starting four right now. Like that'd be a guy that I'd look at if he ended up slipping into the late lottery. We'll see. I think a big part of where he gets drafted will depend on how he performs against Arizona tomorrow, so we'll see.
I'm erring more on the side of LA should just keep the 2026 pick, and you're not in like full win now mode, although you could argue maybe they should be, but like if you can draft a rotation level player in the late first round and have a rotation contributor making $3.8 million, like that is a value, that is a steal for a group that really needs some bargain players going into next season. So if they can, and I will say again, no small guards, like you need to be at least 6'6" to be drafted by the Lakers moving forward. I do not want any players under 6'6". That needs to be a rule. But appreciate you guys for rocking with us for over an hour. Trevor, we missed you. We will be back next week. Jason, this was fun. Glad we did this.
Yeah, it was good to see you, buddy. Yeah, again, we could go after the Mavs game on Monday, but I think it makes more sense to hit the Thunder and Warriors games next week. So we'll go probably most likely Wednesday, Friday. But we'll just keep an eye on the Twitter feed, the Hoops Collective Twitter feed, and we'll let you guys know when we're going.
Yeah, we'll see, because there's also we'll see what happens with Luka, right? Because like, I think that might be worth reacting to maybe on Monday.
Yeah, if Luka's out, we might go Monday. Yeah.
If Luka's out, it might make more sense to just go Monday and screw the rest of the regular season games. But appreciate you all. Being real here, shout out to
we reached the nihilist phase of the show.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Shout out to the chat, and we will talk to you all next week.